Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM.
Thank you to Jenny Green. A perfect evening to get out the back garden with her new soccer ball. It's Wednesday, the 3rd of June, and this is Game On.
I saw that soccer ball and I'm looking forward to seeing her skills. Coming up today, Tony O'Donoghue brings us up to date on Irish soccer.
Mona McSharry joins us before her first dive back into the pool.
We hear from Damien Lawler about the GAA's roadmap for a return to play.
And our Wednesday legend is Ireland's greatest ever rugby captain, Fiona Coughlan.
Game on 2FM.
All that and much, much more between now and 7 o'clock. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Some good news, breaking news, Donica. If you're an athlete, an elite athlete, listen to this. High performance athletes are set to be able to return to their training bases from next Monday. RTÉ News is just breaking this story. The Cabinet is expected to give formal approval to the move in the next 2 days after health clearance was secured. It means that athletes using the National Sports Campus will be able to return to training there. We have lots of high performance athletes who have probably been looking at their peers, their competitors in Europe and thinking, okay, they're getting a bit ahead of me and we need to be able to get back in the pool, get back on the track. We had Sarah Keane of Swim Ireland and the OFI on the show talking about this. She was looking for a special dispensation for the athletes, and Peter Sherrard has also called for this. So I think there'll be a lot of happy people out there, including Mona McSharry, who we're going to talk to very, very soon.
There will be. There certainly will be. The one thing for Marie, I wonder, will it feel like someone has just come back and said the leaving cert's back on? You know, it, like, you want it to come about, but then you're like, oh no, we have to actually go back and perform and feel like we're going to get sick every time, and the ins and outs that come with it. But yeah, it's super news. It's great. And much needed.
Yeah, I think when you're at that level, though, you know, it's all about competition and your career is short when you're an elite athlete. And I think every bit of time off, unless you're recovering from an injury or you need the break, it's difficult to put that time aside and to not be maybe training at the capacity that you're used to. Because, look, training by yourself is always going to be difficult. So I'd say when we chat to Mona shortly, she'll be happy.
And the biggest thing for Mona is she hasn't had access to the pool. I've no doubt she's been jumping in the sea or swimming around her bat or finding a way. There's been paddling pools around Sligo used, so whatever way she could. So yeah, looking forward to catching up on that. Disappointing news about Katie Taylor's fight being postponed again. And for me, this is one of these hard ones, Marie. How do you keep training if they keep pushing it slowly down the track? You know, you can't go constantly at it.
Well, I think if it was anyone else bar Katie Taylor, she said herself that her whole life is like lockdown, because she just kind of lives this solitary existence where she just gives everything to her sport and trains all the time. So she's probably somebody who's so disciplined and so in the zone and so focused on her career and what's coming next that she's able to just ride the storm and wait and keep at a level. But it is difficult when you don't know an exact date. But I'd say Katie should be all right.
I love that idea of Katie Taylor going down to the shop and being like, what's going on? Why are all these people queuing? It's like, what's going on? There's a virus, Katie. All right. But you're right. When you're in the bubble, you get so used to being nearly self-isolated. And I think that was one of the good news stories today, about only one positive coronavirus test from Premier League. So it's certainly back with a bit of a bang now, Marie. And frightening to see how many tests they've actually had, over 5,000 tests. So it's been incredible the effort they're putting in to getting soccer going.
Yeah, it's pretty phenomenal. The numbers are dropping all the time. So I saw today that Sky Sports are going to be showing that opening game, and I actually can't wait just to be able to sit on the couch and turn on the TV, watch a bit of elite level football. I think I'm a bit sick of all the nostalgia. Well, actually, I was a bit sick of the nostalgia until today, when I saw something that really interested me. And it's on this day in 2004, Donegal O'Callaghan gave his teammates something to laugh about by wearing some false ears and teeth during the Irish rugby squad photo before their departure to South Africa. Sportsfall tweeted this earlier. And there you are in the middle of the Irish team, usually a serious photo, these team photos in the Aviva, and you have false teeth and pointy ears on. Tell me why.
I used to, because, do you know what? always those photos were so fake. You know, it was like a false smile. It was like, yeah, whatever. So I used to just try to sneak something on, either a pair of shades, a silly hat, find a way to maybe catch the photographers out. And to be fair to them, the lads in Sports Files, Info, they were always kind of keeping an eye on stuff
on
like
you.
That. Yeah. But the thing was, we actually, I have that photo up in my toilet. It's the only one that we're genuinely all having a good laugh, and it's a bit of fun, and I just thought it was a bit of crack. I did get a bollocking out of Eddie O'Sullivan afterwards, but sometimes you have to put things aside for a bit of crack, Marie, don't you?
I thought you'd lost a bet or something like that, but no.
No, just a bit of fun. Just a bit of fun. You have to keep going, don't you?
I guess when you're in camp and you're spending all the time with your teammates and you're not seeing your family, that you do have to find novel ways to entertain yourself and those around you.
And look, it's immature and it's stupid and it's silly, but it was good crack at the time.
But it was you.
All of the above still. It's good news on the Bundesliga kind of side of stuff, isn't it? With Jordan
Sancho.
Sancho, yeah. Receiving no further sanction for standing up and making his anti-racist statement by wearing a Justice for Floyd t-shirt in the Bundesliga. What did you make of it?
Yeah, he got a yellow card at the time, which is the punishment when you whip off your shirt. You probably did it a few times, Donica, did you?
No.
Never.
No, never. Never. I did get red carded once, and I don't know what happened to me. I started to try to take off my top. I don't know. Maybe it's something you do. Honestly, I'm really interested if people have been sent off before 51552. I think it's a reaction. You just nearly embarrassed your shirt and you try to get through it. But
so it's just the shorts you take off.
All right, Marie, you've gone vicious today. But you know what I like about this? Like, they're leaving him speak out for something that's important to him. And I think this will help players find their voice as well, because we're getting so many PC players now, aren't we? Like, you know, he made a statement, he stood over it, and to be fair to the league, they're standing by him, which is great.
Yeah, I think this is a time when sporting organisations are actually going to come out and support their athletes. A lot of people will have learned from Colin Kaepernick. He made his statement, and that was a few years ago now, and nothing's really changed. So they need to do things differently. And if by supporting players and coming out and making a bit of a difference by getting these statements out there, then it has to be a positive. And FIFA said that they need to use common sense. And to be fair, it's often rare enough that sporting organisations use common sense when it comes to rules. It's usually just they apply them to the letter of the law. But it's nice to see that they're giving these players who feel they need to do this and are clearly affected by it and want to make a difference, that they're being given the opportunity to make their voices heard. And you're right, we don't get that very often.
But do you know what? For me, Marie, it's nearly suppressed. So you're told, say, the PC lines, you know what I mean? Just follow the statements. Like, the protocol is, you do something like that, you get in trouble. Whereas now we're seeing, okay, you know what I mean? You have a voice, let's hear it. And it's good to see that coming back into sport.
Yeah, Lewis Hamilton called out his fellow Formula One teammates for not speaking out. He felt he was standing alone. So this is almost the opposite of that now, you know, that you need to come out and support people, and you need to be heard, and you need to make a difference.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Bit like Italy's Maxime Mdaba, who earned the Knight of Merit Award for frontline work.
What did he do?
The Italian international
pizza man.
He wasn't a pizza man. He was working on the front line. He was going into the community, driving an ambulance.
Oh, that's me in my box.
Yeah, just kind of put his career on hold. And, well, everybody was, but, you know, wasn't doing maybe training like everybody else was. Spent 70 days, the busiest of his life, transporting patients, doing grueling shifts. He said that it was the most intense period of his life. He cried one evening. His father is a surgeon, also on the front line. He said he'll do it all again if any opportunity arose to do it. And he regretted that he hadn't started earlier. Like, these people, unbelievable role models.
Yeah, I regret my pizza gag now. You're 100% right. But what perspective he'll get when he go back to playing his sport. And even even small things that you take for granted, the medical staff around your environment, that you're lucky enough to be, you know, you see in sporting setups, brilliant doctors, brilliant medical care, you'd be grateful for it now. So it's good to see. You know who I am feeling sorry for? The Swedish soccer players. They are turning into their sixth month of pre-season. Ugh.
You know, Munster are taking a bit of time off, I read, in the Limerick Leader. They're taking 3 weeks off-season, which means they're probably going to a pre-season.
Yeah, but look, you were nearly there anyway, but you wouldn't mind it. These poor old Swedish lads, they'd just gone back on the 4th of April, so they'd finished pre-season, which is normally the best time of the year, because it's the equivalent of a sports person's Christmas, because it's the furthest point from the next pre-season. You're like, oh, thank God for games, but the poor old Swedish lads have been at it for 6 months. But yeah, fair play, the Munster lads taking a bit of downtime before hopefully
it ramps back up again.
Yeah, hanging around Costa del Cork at the moment anyway. They'll all be scorched.
Now, Donegal, let's turn our attention to football, because earlier today the FAI released a statement and they reaffirmed their commitment to proceed with plans to restructure in line with the memorandum of understanding between the organisation and government. We are going to talk to Tony O'Donoghue about that very, very shortly. But first, let's hear from the Minister for Transport, Tourism and Sport, Shane Ross.
The really important thing for us was that we got independence in there and that we got independent majority there. And because the old board was not independent at all, it was a clique, the old guard, and it was intransigent and it was trying to stay on. We want to see a complete clear out of the board. We got that clear out of the board, and we now have a situation where there's going to be a six-all division, as I understand it. It's going to be totally reformed, and the independents will have the casting vote. It is absolutely vital for us that there is not a return of the old guard. And those people who are today kicking up and writing letters to UEFA and that, I think that's what their agenda is. It's actually a return of the old guard and the FAI. Well, we're not going to allow that to happen if we can do anything about it. The most radical measure was to have 6-6, right? Was to have 6-6 and then to have a casting vote for the chair, which would mean that the chair is independent. So the independents would have the casting vote. We don't want to get a situation where there's conflict in there at all. We want to have unity. We want to have new people who are interested in Irish football. We've also got a situation with the chief executive, who was appointed as an interim chief executive, is now, his job is being advertised. There's going to be a full, clean process, the like of which you've never seen before in the FAI. I'm very encouraged with the results. I'm very disappointed that somebody has written to UEFA and FIFA and said, look, they want the old ways back. We don't want that. We want this reform. We want football to flourish, but we must see proper governance in Irish football if that's to happen.
Now, that was the Minister for Transport, Tourism and Sport, Shane Ross, speaking earlier today. Now, we are joined on the line by RTÉ soccer correspondent Tony O'Donoghue. Tony, there's just been a little bit of development over the last few days. We heard Shane Ross mention Nixon Morton there, a member of the FAI School's national executive, who wrote a letter to FIFA and UEFA to express concern that the football governing body may be losing sovereignty. How have things progressed since then, and where are we now?
Well, there was an FAI board meeting last night where, as you can imagine, it was one of the first items on the agenda to be discussed because, you know, the FAI, as we know, have been through a traumatic 12-18 months, new board. And I think the most important thing was this memo of understanding, which saved the FAI, bailed them out, even though Shane Ross, the minister at the time, didn't like the term bailout. But basically, there was a 35 million riding on this deal. And otherwise, the FAI, as we know, at football in this country, would have just simply gone out of business, would have gone bust. But that memo of understanding, there were items as part of that. For example, the makeup of the board. There was a governance review before that, of course, which was adopted by the council and by the AGM. And that governance review had agreed to have four independent directors in the FAI board, with eight football members, if you like, in the 12-person board. And that was agreed and understood. But it seemed at the last minute that the change in the memo of understanding made it 6-6. So six independent directors, six football directors, with the casting vote going to the independent chairperson, Roy Barrett. So this famous letter this week from the council member representing the schools, Nixon Morton, that went to FIFA and UEFA. I mean, he did copy the board on it, if you like. He did let them know and the president, but he didn't go to them first. He went directly to FIFA and UEFA, concerned about the sovereignty of football. He said this was a titanic struggle for the heart and soul of football in this country. So people are still clearly very energised about this. But as you heard Shane Ross speak there, talking to RTÉ News a short time ago, he feels that this was an attempt for the old guard to return. And he said that we're not going to let that happen. Now, he was very strong in his view throughout the whole thing, that the whole FAI board should go, that they were tainted by what happened during the John Delaney era. And we know, of course, of all the many scandals and the financial issues and the debt that has been, you know, at the FAI's door, particularly their Aviva Stadium debt, which has just gotten more and more untenable for them. But now he feels that this is the last kick of the old guard, a power struggle. So it's interesting that he's come out so strongly. I think there is concern from members that, you know, obviously COVID has happened since and it's changed everything and we've got no football. But all those reforms had to be agreed at an EGM or an AGM. The AGM isn't until next July. But there was also a concern that members with 10-year service would have to give up at the next AGM rather than, as was agreed, in 3 years' time, in 2022, as it was when the agreement was made. And there was also a concern that the names on the list given to the recruitment company, or by the recruitment company, AMROP, of independent directors, that Roy Barrett, who turned out to be the chairperson, wasn't originally on that list. So there's a lot of issues going on, a lot of concern. But Shane Ross, as we heard, very clear there, he wanted to have the most radical measures he could to change the FAI board and to rid them, I guess, of people who'd been there in the past.
And just regards the timing, why now for Nixon Morton to write this letter, Tony?
Well, that's an interesting one, yeah. I mean, we did wonder why we never heard through all the years of the Delaney era and regime that we hadn't heard a word from Nixon Morton or many of the council members writing to FIFA or UEFA. But I think there is a sense of unrest that from certain sections that the running of football is going out of the hands of football people. But then you can hardly say that Niall Quinn isn't a football person, having, you know, played for and scored so many goals for his country, or Gary Owens has been involved in football at administrative and coaching levels, and Roy Barrett the same. Roy Barrett captained Blackrock College to a national soccer title. Normally, Blackrock College, of course, associated with rugby. So even though they are independents, there was a sense too that each of those three were part of the original Niall Quinn visionary group, and some people have even suggested that, you know, there was like a reverse takeover of the FAI, a coup d'état, as it were. But really, maybe that shouldn't be the issue. Maybe that shouldn't matter. I still wonder sometimes, I scratch my head, do the council members or the rank and file realise how serious the situation was and is, and how close the FAI were indeed to total annihilation, if you like. And they're still there. They're still very close. I know that there are issues all the time, and clearly COVID has only added to those issues rather than taken away. So I think that when they got their deal across the line, when they did, well, the timing for a change for them was perfect.
Tony, am I naive to think that this could just simply be a communications issue? With any strategic plan, governance, everyone needs to feel involved, feeling part of it.
That's a fair point.
Could this be the case?
Well, you know, the FAI this afternoon themselves released a statement referring to what happened at last night's board meeting. And they said in that statement that, you know, I suppose in that case, it felt to me, it sensed as if it was almost like an olive branch. It was like, come and talk to us. You know, it said, the board is available to engage in dialogue with any stakeholder with constructive input during this process in the interest of developing and promoting the game in Ireland. So, yeah, in terms of communications, maybe they should have had that message out there before. But as I say, it's been such a turbulent time. Remember, it's only... what, just a year and a bit since all of this came to light because of the Sunday Times revelations. And in that year, we've seen so much upheaval and so much change and so many scandals being unearthed. Since then, as I say, that memorandum of understanding only happened in the last day of January, I think. And, you know, football, like all sports now, in a bit of a limbo. But like dialogue is really important, and the end of infighting, because it's almost a classic Irish political party fable, isn't it? You know, the first item on the agenda is the split. But the FAI for years and years and years has been split, has been torn apart by political wrangling and upheaval. And you'd like to think that they could get beyond that to the next place.
And Tony, are we any closer to knowing when the league in its full capacity will come back?
Well, even that is causing dissent.
Tony, come on.
No, in the sense that the tournament organised for the clubs that are to be in representing the country in Europe, that would be Dundalk, Shamrock Rovers, Bohemians and Derry City. There is a sense that that's going to give those clubs, those players, a huge incentive and a huge advantage in terms of fitness and cohesion, and even the opportunity to get more, you know, faster to the game, the game time and the peak of their fitness. And all the other clubs will, you know, they'll have 4 weeks at least ahead of the rest of the clubs. And some are saying, you know, in Germany, that they have clubs in Europe as well. They didn't get any special dispensation. The clubs all went back together. So why couldn't all the League of Ireland clubs go back together? And that is a difficult one because, look, the medical advice is shifting slightly, isn't it, day by day, in terms of the different stages of recovery, if you like, and in terms of the advice, whether it's, you know, that I understand that the high-performance athletes now are to be allowed back on Monday. And who's to say that, you know, the footballers in this country aren't high performance either? So maybe all of the clubs should get back into more full contact training as soon as possible, or sooner than at least we earlier expected.
Okay, well, that sounds good. Tony O'Donoghue, thanks so much for joining us. Good to end on a positive note. We might see them all back training soon. Thanks, Tony.
Get them out there. Get them out there.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On. We were chatting a little bit earlier about high-performance athletes being able to return to their training bases from next Monday. So that means that our athletes who are preparing for competition and hopefully going to an Olympics, if it comes in 2021, will be able to get back to whatever they do best. And I'm delighted to be joined on the phone by one of Ireland's top athletes, Mona McSherry. Mona, how are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
No worries at all. Now, Mona, this news has just broken, and at the moment the story is indicating that athletes can use the National Sports Campus. Anyone who's there can go back. Does this apply to you, given that you live in Sligo?
Yes, I was given the offer, but yeah, because I live in Sligo, I made the decision to hold off on, because I didn't feel like travelling to Dublin and staying there full-time was a good decision for me, because I pretty much would have been alone. So I decided just to wait, and hopefully my pool here will be able to offer me something soon enough.
So what have you been up to between now and then? Donica reckons you're in the sea full time.
I am in the sea, not training, but just enjoying myself and enjoying the sun. I'm sure a lot of people are doing the same. I've pretty much just been doing a lot of cycling and running and a little bit of gym. So that's how I've been keeping fit at the moment, and I feel great, so that's a plus.
Is it hard knowing that people that you're going to be competing against, hopefully soon enough when things get back going again, are back training, are back in the pool and are making those gains that you can't really make when you're not going full throttle?
Honestly, I try not to think about it too much, but in my opinion, you know, fitness is fitness, and I am keeping the aerobic base up. I am you know, my muscles are still getting worked, maybe not in the way they would normally when I'm swimming, so there will be an adjustment period for when I do get back into the water. But I think that as long as I'm doing something and I'm pushing myself to keep fit, I'm not going to be that far behind from anyone getting back in the pool. So that's kind of the frame of mind I'm trying to stay in.
Mona, things have been going so well for you. You look at the European Short Course Swimming Championships, the bronze medal in the 50-metre breaststroke and the Irish new record in the 100 metres. You must be thrilled with how you've moved into, you know, international swimming.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm so happy, especially, you know, I've been a senior athlete for 3 years now, so It's nice to finally kind of break the surface and be able to win a medal, you know, at senior level. So it is a really, really nice feeling as well, you know, to be able to go faster and get Irish records and stuff like that. You know, to be the fastest female ever in that event is great. It's just a great buzz. I guess it just proves that all the hard work pays off.
Mona, I've been lucky enough to be around you a bit, but that independent thinking...
Donica. When, come on.
All right.
There's
your
moment.
We won for this family.
Look at you being modest for a change.
It was brilliant, Mona, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was a good crack, yeah. But just that independent thinking, you know, that you could easily get caught up in high performance. I need to be in Dublin, but you've always been measured and known, no, that's actually not right for me. I need to be around home. And when, as long as I'm fit, healthy and well, and I can train a different way.
Yeah, exactly. You know, for me, you know, I did weigh it up and, you know, the idea of getting back in the water sounds amazing. But, you know, I didn't want to, I'd be doing, 4 hours of training a day? And then what am I doing for the rest of the time I'm there? So I just thought, for me personally, I have to keep my mental strength strong as well. And kind of isolating myself alone 3 hours away from all my family didn't sound like the right idea for me. So, I'm just going to keep working away here. And like I said, hopefully the pool will open eventually.
Mental strength, Mona, is that something that you work on with someone, or is it just something that you're kind of conscious of and make sure that you're as sharp as you can be?
I did work with someone just to improve my mental strength, especially when I was going through a bit of a lull in my career. And now I focus on it a lot more just myself, even trying to, basically realizing that it plays such a large part in racing well. I don't think I realized as much when I was a junior how important it is to, you know, be strong mentally. So now I work a lot on visualization and, you know, having a healthy mental well-being and all of that. So, I've definitely worked on it a lot over the last maybe year, more so than any other time.
We had Nadia Power on, an Irish athlete who had won a medal a little while ago at the under-23s, and she's made the step up to senior now. And like she said, it's difficult. Mona, give us a little bit of a picture of what it was like for you, because so many times we see these brilliant young athletes and just making that transition, it's not easy. We know that.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think, you know, I fooled myself thinking it would be a lot easier than it was. I came out of, I think, my last summer at junior level, I won 5 international medals. So I was kind of on a bit of a high and I felt kind of unstoppable. And then jumping into senior, I expected to be as good, you know, making finals, getting medals, which is obviously not the case because it's a completely different field of athletes, a much, you know, bigger field. And I think it took me a while to realize that it does take 2 to 3, even 4 or 5 years to, you know, build your way up again and get back to the top. I think that's really important that, you know, a lot of people realize that if you're moving from any sort of level, that, you know, you're not going to just jump into the top at the new level. You're going to have to work your way up. So that's kind of what I realized over the last 3 years.
I always struggle when I interview swimmers because you're so young, like you're only 19 and you've came so far, and you know, you reach a senior level at such a young age. It's almost crazy to think, just listening to you, the way you're speaking, that you're still a teenager.
Yeah, no, I suppose it is strange when even when I talk with other athletes, and yeah, the age groups are completely different. I think for swimming it is quite young to think that, like, 17, 18, you're going to be racing against senior athletes that could be, you know, 30, 40. You know, so it is kind of difficult because you are still young and you really are only learning. But I guess, like, for me, I was so lucky that I traveled to a couple of senior meets when I was maybe 15, 16 and got to kind of experience all that really young, that the kind of jitters of racing at a big meet were out of the way for me, which is great. And at the end of the day, it is just another competition. You're in your own lane as a swimmer and you just have to focus on yourself and not anyone else around you.
We've all been hit with the effects of COVID-19 and it's stopped us all in our tracks. But you've big plans, Mona, for the future with heading to the States for college. Is that all still hopefully going as you expect it to?
Yeah, it's it's all kind of going ahead at the moment. I think we're kind of all waiting to hear what the college is going to do, to be honest. I've been chatting with coaches over there and my team, and at the moment the plan is to just go ahead as if I am going over there. So that's what I'm planning. I think I will be going over probably at the end of July. It'll definitely be a different year than maybe other freshmen have experienced, but I should be over there for the year, so that would be really, really nice, because I'd hate to think I'd have to put it on hold for another year.
That would be incredibly disappointing. Mona, from an elite athlete point of view, of course you want to get back in the pool, but just as a swimmer, anyone listening at home that's into swimming, I've four kids at home, would love to just jump in and have a splash around. How important is it that we get the pools open?
You know, I think it's all about, you know, you have to realise what's going on, and people are still being told, you know, to stay at home and don't go out unless you have to. And I'm completely for that. So I think there's no need to rush into opening the pools. As much as I'd love to just jump in and, you know, go for a swim out or even a hard session, I miss the sessions in the pool. But I think at this point we kind of just have to be smart and wait until the right time to open the pools, which, you know, I don't have the answer, but I'm hoping it's going to be soon. I think that's all anyone can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Mona, thanks so much for joining us on Game On. Pass on our regards to all your family.
Can people defend their title? Does it work like that, or once you've won it,
It would be too easy, Mona, wouldn't it?
It's all about the coach.
When you were asking about mental toughness, I was there. You've never met Mona's mom.
Viola, is it?
Yes.
Yes, I saw the final.
Yeah.
Brilliant, Mona. Thanks a million.
Thank you so much for having me. Game on
2FM. Maria, I love chatting to Mona McSherry there. I always enjoy her company anyway, but I love that independent thinking from the top athletes, just to make a call that, OK, that might be the right decision for me sports-wise, but just me as a person, I'm going to find a different way to do it. And I think we're chatting about, you know, young players finding their voice. I think that's quite important too, to say, no, that's personally, that's not right for me. It might be right for my sport, but at this time, no, I'll hold up and I'll make sure I'm safe and well with my family.
You obviously know her quite well. Just unbelievable maturity and an ultimate competitor.
Yeah, and do you know what I loved about her? Like, they started making a big thing in Ireland for this family in some of the races, that she was the only girl in the race, and she was like, what do you want about it? Like, I'm way better than all of them. And I just loved it. When you're looking for Elsa's, when you're looking for role models, she was like, why are they making a big deal over this? So I was like, go on, Mona, you beaut. So, you can just tell it. But then it drips down from the family. It really does. It's when you're around, when you've a good network like that, and like her brother, Murrick, he's one to watch as well.
And the mom and dad are so competitive. It was great.
Unbelievable competitive. And they're still at it. They didn't pick them first.
Oh, God.
You went with them and they were like, you didn't pick us.
Delica, after spending much of the last 3 months cautiously planning a return to activity, the GAA are going to give us some news towards the end of the week or early next week. Damien Lawler will tell us very soon. They have their return to play roadmap agreed on, and it will be ratified by the GAA management later in the week, and then they will tell us. But Damien, of course, Damien Lawler, our ace GAA reporter, has all the news. Damien.
Yeah, sometimes it's good not to have any news, where you've a much easier, handier life, I can tell you that much.
The man with the news. So you had it all today. First thing, the meeting was last night. Logged on to RTE.ie and there's Damien Lawler with pretty much all the roadmap. So fill us in.
Well, look, I think that, first of all, as you say, the management committee meet tomorrow. So anything that is written or said before then is probably all speculative.
Sources.
Until they give the green light tomorrow. And the next big juncture then, folks, is on Friday, when hopefully Taoiseach brings us through to the next phase, and then the GAA can react then, I think. And it's remains to be seen whether it's on Friday or Saturday that they do. But there is a roadmap coming. The bits I know about it are very, very promising, all contingent on everything staying low virus-wise. The R rate of reproduction has to be contained. It has to remain low. But if we can get through the next phase, and if the government are happy to keep going like this, well, there is light at the end of the tunnel. And I suppose, Marie and Dunica, for the last 3 months on this show, I suppose in many ways it's gone quickly, but in other ways, depending on how many kids you have at home, it's really gone slowly. We've been speculating the whole time, but the good news is now, for the moment, the speculation will hopefully finish up, even temporarily on Friday, when we find out what's happening, because at the end of the day, people are getting ready to come back in some shape or form. And I think it'll go through the phases, Marie. It'll start off, we're probably on June the 8th, which is Friday. The walkways will be potentially open for clubs who want them opened. They will be for just groups of four to walk around. Those people that walk will have to live nearby within probably a 20k radius. But it'll start from there. And club premises will be open, at least on the outside. And it's a very small start, but from there it'll kick off.
Damien, you mentioned that there, like 3 months of lockdown and a roadmap coming out. How important is it that it has hope? You know, that it gives a clear line for players, for volunteers, for everyone involved in the GAA.
For fans.
Yeah, for all of us. Absolutely. You know, it's a great point, Donika. And just to have something to even talk about or speculate over, just to have something to think about. And there are side effects to this. For example, people are going to have to enforce this at club level as well. But, like, for example, if you're looking at what the GEA mentioned privately, I suppose, over the past 2 or 3 weeks, that maybe club action could get back maybe towards the end of June, and there has been talk about that. Well, you're only a few weeks away then from potentially games being played if things are looking okay virus-wise. And suddenly the entire focus around a parish, a village, a town, a suburb shifts, because you have a focal point again, you have something to aspire to, you have something to look ahead to, something to measure or try and gauge yourself against. That's the chink of light, and that's the conversation that goes around. The other side of it too is, and John Horan mentioned this 2 or 3 weeks ago, and this is going to be something that is going to have to come into play now. You are probably going to have a designated COVID officer at every club. You are going to need to be accountable, and parents are probably going to have to sign off before they drop off kids. So this is going to take a bit of a work, and it's going to be responsible people, club stalwarts. It usually, the load usually ends up with 2 or 3 people anyway, but this is where it's going to have to be looked at carefully. And this is why the GEA were so cautious about unrolling the phases, because it all comes down on the clubs again now, and you're going to have to think personally who's responsible. Ultimately, personal responsibility comes in here now. If you're going to go back and allow your kids, or you're going to train yourself, you're responsible for that. And you can't place the load on any club, I don't think. Having said that, there are going to be protocols in place for when training does resume. Signage is going to be everywhere around the club facilities. It's going to be ages before you get anywhere inside the GAA premises. It'll be ages before contact training is allowed. So they are going about it on a very responsible phase basis.
What about the cool camps, Damien?
They're a live prospect, Marie. Even here today, trying to enrol my own two in it, you can still do that.
Oh, good to know. I didn't know that. Brilliant.
Will you put down 3 for Crow?
I'd say between the three of us, we get a discount for maybe 9 or 10. Yeah, Charlie Harrison is after designing a kind of a return roadmap there, in fairness to him, put in a huge amount of work there. And they're a live prospect too. What way they're going to go about that, Marie, that will all depend on the government restrictions and advice at that period in time. But definitely a live prospect for August. And you could run them as usual. You could run them on a regional basis. It all depends on what the guidelines are at the time. But I think, again, they'll be very much spaced out over a field, to be maybe in groups of 5, socially distanced where you can. They are going to take a lot of work. And some counties actually, like for one county up north, for example, I don't think we'll hold a cool camp this year because some of their staff are on furlough. Other counties like Cork, certain clubs won't hold them. So it'll be at the club or county's behest what happens. But they're definitely a live prospect at the moment. And, you know, from where we stand here now at the tip of June, there is a lot to look forward to going ahead if this thing will stay low and stay contained. And you could be potentially looking at a club championship there from very, very end of July over the next...
Behind closed doors, Damien, I assume.
Well, you see, when you get to phase 5, Marie, there is an allowance made for certain gatherings outdoor and indoor. So I think maybe it'll probably start off behind closed doors, but I think you get to a certain stage and you are allowed a crowd of a certain number at an outdoor event. And I suppose if you are going to play these games, they'll probably be willing bigger venues now, I would imagine, and hopefully get a crowd in there and space them out as well. So all that is going to have to be looked at too. And I think maybe around August time, we'll have a fair idea what's going to happen with Intercounty then. I think if the conditions are good, I think maybe you'd be looking at getting kind of a roadmap there for the intercounty basis, you know. So certainly we're a long, long way away from where we were 2 weeks ago.
That's for sure. Damien, I'd say there'll be a lot of lads now and girls who were thinking of retiring or dropped off panels for a while. I'll be coming back just so they can watch a match. I'll be like, put me on the extended squad there.
Looking at this, Marie, an 8-week championship would nearly see you through. So, I mean, it's if I was there with a rusty old hamstring, I'd be resting against the door frame now and putting a bit of ice on it and saying, look, there's a chance I might get this baby one last shot yet, you know.
Damien, just on your point there about personal responsibility for people like ourselves to take the responsibility as opposed to putting it on club volunteers, how important is that in the roadmap?
Absolutely massive. And I think looking around at all the society, I mean, you're looking at maybe clutches of young children going around maybe around towns and they're not social distancing. And where does the responsibility lies? It lies with them and their family. And if you're dropping your child off the training, you know, and our lads here are dying to get back into it, you know, as a parent or a guardian, you have to accept responsibility there. The buck stops with you. And once you sign maybe a form of consent and once things are done properly, once your kids are being spaced out, there's sanitizers around the ground, there's a proper COVID supervisor there, you know, that's about as much onus or responsibility as you can put on a GAA club, in my opinion. It has to come down to them doing their jobs right. They are volunteers as well, of course, and it also comes down to personal responsibility and that, you know, if your child is showing any symptoms or has any sign of a temperature, you don't let them go anywhere near it. So definitely don't get, it's only going to work with personal responsibility and with the clubs working hard too on the ground.
Damien, just before we let you go, if you're just to give us a quick predicted timeline or projected timeline, do you think, for club and when Intercounty could start if we get the go-ahead next week?
Yeah, well, look, I suppose going back to Marie, it all depends on the restrictions. But I would say if going back on what the GAA have mentioned previously, I'd say a championship starting around mid-October would be something to look at for Intercounties. But if you're going back then to club, I'd say maybe the start of August, even late July, if things are going right. I'd say they're just based on what GAA officials have previously spoken about, even at the start of the lockdown, they would be maybe the roadmaps you'd have. And I think even to get to that scenario would be quite incredible, really, considering the journey we've come on. Because I think the night the President John Horan went on the Sunday game and spoke sense and spoke facts, I think a lot of people accepted then maybe 2020 could be a write-off. But there has been a change in mood in the country. The rate of infection has dropped, thankfully. The number of ICU cases have dropped as well. And if they can keep the second wave at bay and if things are going well in society, the other sporting organisations have already gone down the road of trying to return to action as well. And I think the GAA is different in that it gets into every corner of Ireland, every community, the amateur players, workplace members, family members, they all have to be considered as well. So that's probably why there was some caution along the way. But there's definitely a little chink of light at the moment. And management will take a look at a roadmap on tomorrow, Marie. And then by Friday or Saturday, there should be a public announcement specifying exactly where we're going to go from here.
Damien, I'd say there's a little bit more than a chink of light. I'd say there's players everywhere now digging out the boots and putting in the Hurley's order for Hurley's and getting excited about what's coming down the track. Thanks so much for joining us.
3 points apiece here. As Briggs comes up and launches this one and kicks it straight between the posts, and Ireland are into the lead here in Milan. And the referee has blown the full-time whistle. Parabaggio erupts and belongs to Ireland. The girls are celebrating out there on the field of play, and Ireland have won the Grand Slam for the first time ever.
In rugby, like most other sports, cap for your countries are seen as the barometer for personal success. But the real legends of the sport know that the only measurement that matters is what you do in your time. So with 11 All-Ireland League medals, 3 Interpros, a triple crown, a Six Nations championship in a Grand Slam year, and the ultimate rugby scalp, a win over the All Blacks in a World Cup, our Wednesday legend is the most successful rugby captain of all time in Ireland. Fiona Coughlin didn't waste a single cap, and we are delighted she joins us now.
Hi, Fiona.
Hi, how are things?
We're great. Yourself?
That was a lovely introduction.
Everybody always has to take a second after Donica's Wednesday Legend intros. So you've got to let it sink in. It's a lot.
I'm waiting for the hammer blow to come from one of my teammates there.
No, and that's what happens sometimes, Fiona, isn't it? We're so used to that a compliment comes with a cutdown, but not with our Wednesday Legends. When I look back at your career, incredible.
You're jealous, Donica, is what you're saying.
The one that stands out, Fiona, the 11 AILs, like that's Irish rugby gold, isn't it?
Ah, look, it was unbelievable. I think from the very start, that first year, it was ULBO's first time having a women's team, and they really went about it the right way. They said they wanted to be the best in the country, and they put plans in place to ensure that that happened. We certainly didn't think it would happen the first year back in 2002, I think it was. But they had the right coach, the right structure in place, and they went about getting the right people in the team. And there was a lot of us that were very new to the game at that stage, but... we had Ian Costello as coach. He obviously went on to be a professional coach back then, but it was just really the club, and they really respected the women's game and wanted to drive it, and they were certainly were driving forces. Huge number of internationals came from ULBO's, and obviously we had 11 titles along the way.
Fiona, new to the game is one way of putting it, but you'd literally just taken it up when you went to college. Like, how do you do that? Like, take up a new sport and then get to a level where you're captain in your country? You must have just taken to it.
Yeah, I think there's kind of two elements to that side of things. I think having played a variety of sports growing up, you certainly have skills that are transferable. A new game, new laws, but a lot of skills are transferable. And at that stage, women's rugby was quite new. There wasn't a huge number playing the game. And I would say the standard was quite poor, and it was just because numbers and the newness of it. So I was kind of lucky in that sense the progression was quite quickly at the start. But as you progress, all the other bloody countries are progressing as well. So at the start, we were certainly playing catch-up. We were wooden spooners for a couple of years at the start, which was very difficult, and a couple of hammerings against England and the likes of France. But I think every year we kind of saw progression, and I think that was certainly the thing that kept driving me, that there was progression every year, and I knew the talent was in the country.
Fiona, on that, and we'll go back to it, the progression and playing catch-up, but just, if you wouldn't mind, just chatting about leadership and the quality of a leader, especially when you're dealing with stuff off the pitch that is quite difficult. Like, we all heard the stories of desperate travel arrangements, poor standards set in place that didn't help your performances.
Yeah, look, we were against the odds a couple of times, but we had a great group, and a core group there for a number of years. And then every year you get a smattering of youth that brought an exuberance along with them, but certainly had great management and coaches along the way that were very passionate, and we were all on the same page. And you know, in some ways, when you don't know, like, so we're not professional, so we don't know what it's like to be professional. We didn't have the best travel arrangements ever, so we didn't know what it was like. Sometimes ignorance is kind of a good thing as well. And then when something bad really happens, like in 2012, a terrible journey, it was certainly a really galvanising moment for the squad, where we were like, well, we have to sort this out for ourselves on the pitch in order to get, I suppose, media coverage, in order to get the respect of the public, and for people to sit up and notice that we were a team to be reckoned with. And 2012 was certainly a galvanising moment.
Tell us about the journey from then, because you went on to have some absolutely remarkable days in the green jersey. Fiona, there must be a couple of highlights from then.
Look, there was highlights all along. I'd even go back, your first cap was great. 2008, the Europeans, we finished joint third, which was huge for us. Even sometimes the manner in which we played against England, we were always beaten against them, but the manner in which we played was, it certainly gave you confidence. The 2013 season started, and we beat Wales by a whisk. Like, we kind of robbed the game, and no one had really spoken about it. But then when you go on and beat England for the first time, 25-0, that's the moment that people started sitting up and taking notice of us. The English game and the French game that year in 2013 were very good games of rugby. Unfortunately, the Grand Slam game wasn't that good. It was a horror game and in horror conditions. So while it was lovely to lift a trophy at the end of it, I certainly wanted the game to finish as quickly as possible. And then you flip on and you have the New Zealand game, which was probably our most complete performance that I've ever played in an Irish jersey. It was a really, really good performance from everyone in the squad. So, yeah, certainly big standout moments.
Fiona, whatever about the performance, getting to the mental pitch for that game, you know, like, it's uncharted waters for any Irish rugby player, never beaten New Zealand, not alone in a World Cup. How did you get the players right?
Yeah, I suppose we'd never played them, so it was a bit of an unknown, but, you know, they had that aura about them. Going into that World Cup, we'd spoken a lot about finishing top four, and we knew it's incredibly difficult to get even into the top four because you basically have to win your pool or become next best runner-up over three pools. But we genuinely couldn't look beyond our first game because it was the USA, and in women's rugby they were ranked ahead of us. So that whole summer, a lot was based on our fitness and our skill level, and everyone just committed so much that summer. Like, no stone went unturned to have us in the best possible shape, both in terms of fitness and the way in which we wanted to play. And then we had a good game against the USA in the opening game, and we had a 4-day turnaround. So it's a very short turnaround with sore bodies after playing a very physical USA. We knew that although we spoke a lot about our fitness, and at 60 minutes that we were still in the game, that we had the fitness to pull us through. But all our conversations and everything, the game plan, was all about us beating New Zealand. It wasn't about stopping New Zealand. It was all about us beating New Zealand. And I think the coaches put the right game plan in place. Everyone was on the same page. And there was a real calmness, even on the pitch. And I remember at 60 minutes, we just scored the try. I think it was a 59 or something. And then it hit 60 minutes. It's like, we have this. We're fitter than them. And even though they were making line breaks, our scramble defence was unbelievable. The commitment was phenomenal. And then Breaksy booed at the ball down the pitch, and we ended up staying down there for the last 10 or 12 minutes. And it was a phenomenal performance from everyone.
I think it left its mark on a lot of people, and you did as well during your career, Fiona. And it's actually no surprise to see when you did transfer over to the media side of things, you're making your mark there as well. And it's so normal now to turn on a man's match or a women's match and to hear your voice and you're co-commentating or you're doing your analysis, and you're just equal, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, look, I've been given brilliant opportunities by RTE. First of all in the women's game, then into the Olympics, and then obviously into the World Cup this year and on Against the Head. And while I was probably nervous and probably questioned myself, I suppose when someone says, will you do this, they've got the confidence in you, and it kind of gave me the confidence. And far being a referee, you're sitting in one of the best seats looking at the game. So, I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and I've learned an awful lot, and hopefully it continues. I love being involved in the game and talking about it, and hopefully for a couple more years it might continue.
Absolutely, Fiona, we've loved having you on, and more importantly loved watching you throughout your career. Thanks so much for joining us on Game On.
Cheers, folks.
Thanks Fiona. Talk to you soon, no doubt. Donnacha, a bit of news. It's not really sports news, but it's news you're going to be interested in. Tony Houlihan says that the summer camps will be part of their discussions tomorrow, and he won't get into whether there has been a discussion with the GAA or not. So we'd mentioned it to Damien about the cool camps, so it looks like there could be summer camps coming back.
Well, let's text Damien straight away. We need 7 spots. The O'Callaghan's.
No wonder he had the kids booked in. He was way ahead of us.
He was way ahead. All the parents are looking around the place. How do we get them in?
Fantastic. Tomorrow we are going to have another packed show. We have Jason Sherlock coming up, which I'm very excited about because there are so many elements of his career that we can get stuck into, and we're going to have our eye in America as well.
Oh, brilliant. Can't wait. Game on 2FM.